Welcome to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. I'm your producer and host, Ben Finan, director of content at Steinway. If you enjoy Soundboard, please rate, review, and subscribe to it wherever you pod your casts. This episode of Soundboard was recorded live from the Big Ears Festival held each March in Knoxville, Tennessee. Go Vols! Steinway & Sons is the official piano of Big Ears. My guest today is the jazz bassist Christian McBride. McBride is the artistic director of Jazz House Kids, a community arts organization based in Montclair, New Jersey, founded by his wife, vocalist Melissa Walker. Steinway & Sons is a proud sponsor of Jazz House Kids.
I listened to two albums yesterday. I listened to your new Jean, which
Didn't you go to
Philadelphia, new Jean.
Come on, man.
Sorry, pass me that Jean. Pass me
exactly.
That Jean right here.
That's right.
All right, so I listened to new Jean, and then I listened to Getting to It. Back to back.
You bookended.
Listen, Getting to It, it was like putting on an old pair of jeans.
Right.
I was like, oh, yeah. I remember.
I sure wish I could wear my jeans from the Getting to It days.
To it, I heard more set pieces. I heard more.
Yeah.
You know, if people are playing unison in jazz, that's prearranged.
Right.
Right. So then I heard a little more chaos in new Jean. So let's talk about what happened in between that.
Oh, that's like, what, 25 years?
Yeah.
Maybe 30 years.
And I'm 47. Are you 50?
I'll be 52 in May. 52. Yeah.
You're all over the place stylistically. Everyone always talks about you. Oh, he's post-bop. I'm not quite sure if that quantifies what's happening with you, though.
Well, I think most of the time people tend to place you where they might need you,
okay.
You know, in their internal stylistic box, as well as the industry, so to speak, because, you know, I mean, from the time I moved to New York, which was the end of 1989, I recorded Getting to It in 1994. So if you take that 4.5 year span, most of the people who I cut my teeth with were post-bop legends, you know, Freddie Hubbard, Joe Henderson, McCoy Tyner, Bobby Hutcherson, Bobby Watson, Roy Hargrove, Joshua Redman. Okay, so that's fair, you know, especially if you're looking at it in 1995 when Getting to It came out. I had a chance to be mentored by the late, great Ray Brown. But from 1995 up until I did Prime was the second new Jean album. The first one we did in 2017, which was just self-titled. But in between Getting to It and that, I mean, I can't even begin to put my finger on the different styles of music I've had a chance to play with so many people. You know, I've gone from John Zorn and Laurie Anderson to Sting and Billie Eilish and Edgar Meyer. You know, our new album comes out tomorrow, so I don't know. Even with all of that, I think I still get defaulted as a post-bop guy, mostly because of my beginnings. And again, I get it. I'm not sure it's this. I'm not sure that's accurate, but I get it. But I'm glad you're listening. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You say I'm not sure that's accurate.
Right.
Give me a more accurate description for what you do, if you care to.
I feel like I'm overly pragmatic, meaning that I am a working bass player.
Okay.
You know, as a professional musician, what I was trained to do is fine work. you give your number out to musicians as a professional, and they hire you. It's almost like being a craftsman, you know. Somebody hires you to fix their house, and professionals say, okay, what do you need done? Whereas, you know, as an artist, you might be able to get away with saying, oh, no, I only work on craftsman houses. But as a working bass player, I've been trained to play with everybody, do what the situation calls for. We're at Big Ears right now, and, you know, I'm playing with my regular band. I'm playing with Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Teresi. I'm playing with Edgar Meyer, and I'm playing with Brad Meldow. Four completely different hats that I have to wear in a 48-hour span. Is it difficult? No, because I'm a bass player that plays to the situation. You know?
It's the preparation.
Now, that's different.
Okay.
Yeah.
The preparation for each of those, let's just take each of those gigs.
Yeah.
How's it different?
Well, it's specifically different here because I'm playing four different sets in 2 days. So I'm not going to get a real opportunity to really let any of these instances settle in. You know, it's like, okay, this gig is over. Boom, now I got to change up. That part is actually not that fun. You know what I mean? Because, like, you want to be able to soak it in and absorb it and realize how much fun it was. Maybe what you would have done different or what we'll do the next time. But you ain't got time for that. You now got to get ready for the next show. So my regular band, we play together all the time. So I'm not really worried about that. But Rhiannon, she has her own thing that she does. I have my own thing that I do. And we did a couple of dates together in Europe last summer. And they were wonderful. But we haven't played together since then. So it's been almost a year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll need to get together and figure out what we did last year. And I'm sure it'll be simple. But then, you know, Edgar, from my standpoint, he's the world's greatest bass player. You know what I mean? Especially holding that bow, he's unsurpassed. So now I got to get myself mentally prepared to go one-on-one against Jordan. And then after that's over, I play a duet set with my old friend Brad Meldow. Now, that's not going to really take a lot of energy to figure out what we're going to do. But Brad and I haven't played a duet set together in over a year. So, you know, we need time to just at least talk down what we might want to do, you know. Mm-hmm. And knowing Brad, he might bring a couple of sheets for me to read, you know, and vice versa. It's not so much the stylistic changes, but it's the time you have to prepare for these stylistic changes, which is going to be, that's going to be a trip.
Okay, so let's stay with Steinway artist Brad Meldow.
Yeah.
When you're in with him, is it a question of finding a flow together? Are you in a passenger seat with Brad? Are you guys co-pilots? How does that work?
I think any duet is a co-pilot. Mm-hmm. There's only two people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brad and I have so much history together. Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of me waiting for him to tell me where to go. You know, we navigate each other, and that's the beauty of jazz, and that's the beauty of having history with someone.
Yeah.
You kind of know where they're going to go.
Yeah, okay. So you know the moves.
Sure.
You know the dance moves with him.
Yeah.
What about with Edgar? Like, you're both bassists. This is an unusual situation. It's not often one.
Supposedly.
Okay. tell me why it's not unusual.
Well, I had Super Bass with Ray Brown.
Yep.
That was three basses.
Right. Okay.
You know, I played.
You've trod this path before.
Oh, man. I've played so many multi-bass gigs with so many people. Like, it shouldn't be considered unusual. I mean, you know, if you go to electric bass, you know, Stanley Clark, Victor Wooten, and Marcus Miller mm-hmm. had their tour a few years back. Gosh, there's so many multi-bass, you know, Ornette Coleman had his band with three bass players. Right after Ray Brown died, we had a tribute to Ray at the Monterey Jazz Festival where I played a set with Charlie Hayden and Percy Heath. And a couple of years, I think it was 2019 maybe, John Patitucci, myself, and John Clayton did a three-bass thing. And Patitucci and I did some duo concerts in Europe a few years back. So, yeah, the whole multi-bass thing, that happens a lot more then people notice, I guess.
What's the appeal of that?
What is more than one bass player going to do that would be able to sustain a certain level of musical interest, you know? Because a bass is more felt than heard. At least I feel the real successful bass players are more felt than they are heard. So when you have two instruments that are doing, putting out more vibration than most, how do you make that sustainable? And that's not that hard of a challenge if you're standing next to a really, really great bass player. You know, somebody who can get up and down the neck in a very musical way. And so everybody I named, you know, Patitucci, Clayton,
Victor Lamont,
Victor, all of them, you know.
How do you not step on each other's toes? Because you're occupying the same sonic space.
Right, right.
And that's unlike in, say, a jazz trio where everyone has their own hurts.
Well,
right?
You do step on each other's toes every once in a blue moon. But, like, you only step on each other's toes if you're trying to do the same thing at the same time. If I'm walking, the other bass player's not walking. You know, if they're walking, I'm not walking. Now, if we're both soloing simultaneously, the so-called stepping on each other's toes is not a bad thing. You know, it was supposed to be that way. So this is all about sort of like what happens in the big picture. But most of the time, you don't get a lot of simultaneous soloing. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Sit down with a new tune. What are the priorities there for approaching a new piece of music?
I think it varies depending on the group, the situation. No matter who it is, somebody hands me a piece of sheet music. My first thing is to look for the trouble spots. Like I'm looking for passages that might seem rhythmically difficult. I think most musicians do that. They just kind of do a quick scan, like, okay, uh-oh, what's that?
What's the landscape? Where are my potholes?
Exactly. Where are the potholes? And then once you do that, you run it down, you really follow the lead of the composer. I mean, that's what I always do. In jazz, you get a piece of sheet music, you are allowed to bring your own groove, your own feel to that. But if they say, no, I had more like this in mind, then you do that. Again, I'm more pragmatic. I just look for the trouble spots on the paper. And then I just follow the orders of the composer. Now, if it's my piece, I usually have in mind who's playing it. So I kind of know what I'm dealing with. But the same thing, if a person's playing whatever, generally speaking, it's going to be okay. And if it's not, I'll just say, hey, could you do a little more something like this? You know, and they tend to do it.
What role does the bass play in jazz?
Well, again, the bass is more felt than heard. You know, the drums play rhythm. They will argue with you and tell you that they can play melody and harmony, but they can't.
Some cats tune their drums, though, right?
Yeah,
I got
okay.
The fifth here. I got
whatever. But the drums, I believe, are the personality of any group. However the drummer plays, that tends to be the vibe of the whole band. But the bass player really is it's the gravity, it's the central force, it's the central nervous system of the band. because both the drums and the piano and the guitar go through the bass. Sting always came up with this great statement, which is true. He always said, if the entire band plays a C chord, a C major chord, if the bass player doesn't play a C, it's not a C chord. Mm. If the bass player plays an A, it's an A minor chord. So the bass has that kind of power, harmonic power, in any band.
And I'm glad you brought up Sting, because we'll hear some moves from him even in old Police songs.
Right.
That's those subtle shifts that just turn the tune on a dime.
That's right.
While singing. How does he do it?
yeah. I love that. You go back and listen to some of those old Police songs, and they're pretty brilliant. You know, when I first started playing with Sting in 2001, he used to say, man, it's so awkward trying to just sing. I don't usually do that. You know, I'm used to having my electric bass.
He's not grounded.
Right. So we first started having rehearsals. He's kind of standing there. He's just like, I feel awkward, you know. So he finally would just hold his bass, because that's the muscle he's used to, you know, doing both things. I think that's pretty incredible. I think most people can't wait to put their instrument down so they can just concentrate on singing. Sting is like, nah, I got to do both.
I'm thinking about Wrapped Around Your Finger, where he walks up.
Yeah, yeah.
That one spot, it changes the whole.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Talk about Jazz House Kids. I bet we do.
Man, Steinway has been so kind and wonderful with Jazz House Kids. Of course, it's one of those iconic names that people know, even if they know nothing about music. It's like Rolex. People just know what it is. So yes, I'm very proud of what my wife started with Jazz House Kids, my wife Melissa Walker, and what we've been able to build over the last 20 plus years. When Steinway came on as a supporter, we just couldn't be any more grateful.
What do you hope to see long term with Jazz House Kids? What's the goal?
I would just like to see us keep doing what we're doing, and that's teaching young people democracy through music, you know, specifically through jazz music.
Unpack democracy through music.
What we think the world should be, or what the world is supposed to be, actually happens in a jazz group, meaning that you have a leader, but you have people making their own decisions inside of that. And you have to listen to each other. You have to respond to each other. You have to pay attention to what's going on while serving the leader's vision, you know. And if you ultimately can't get with the leader's vision, can always leave the band and find another band that fits you a little better. But the other thing is, most great musicians think about serving first than receiving. And when you play in a jazz group, particularly a big band, you have the leader of the big band, but you also have the saxophone section, the trombone section, the trumpet section. There are leaders inside of those sections. So the leader of the saxophone section has to check with the actual leader of the band. And then everyone in the saxophone section has to check with the saxophone leader. And, you know, so everybody's following somebody. But if the leader of the saxophone section says, hey, we should phrase this part right here, we should phrase it like this. One of those four remaining saxophone players say, well, what if we phrase it like this? Even the leader can say, hey, you know, that's not a bad idea. Now, what happens is maybe somebody might get jealous and say, well, if they get to say it as a friend, I want to phrase it like this. Now it starts to unravel. Now the leader has to say, hey, we're going to do it like this, okay? Because, like, if we waste time having all four of you, like, saying, hey, we should do it like this, do it like that. No, let's do it like this. Hey, I got to make a decision so we can make music. You know, times are wasted. So I think what happens in a jazz group is actually a utopian democratic world.
What about jazz's role in the larger musical universe, which has certainly changed since 75 years ago?
It gives people who take time to develop their ideas and their thoughts and their intellect a place to go. Because we're so surrounded by pop culture, which is basically imagery more than anything else. Testosterone, sort of get to the common denominator. Jazz gives the thinking person a place to go.
You've been listening to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. We heard clips from In a Hurry, the opening track on Christian McBride's Gettin' to It on Verve, Head Bedlam, the opening track to Christian McBride and New John's album Prime on Mack Avenue Records, Philly Slop from Christian McBride and Edgar Meyer's But Who's Gonna Play the Melody on Mack Avenue, and Wrapped Around Your Finger by The Police from Synchronicity on A&M Records. Our opening music is Philip Glass's Mad Rush on a Steinway Model M, played by me, Ben Finan, Director of Content at Steinway & Sons. Our closing music is The Good Life by Christian McBride and New John from Prime on Mack Avenue. Question for the podcast? Email me at info@steinway.com with the subject heading Soundboard. Message me on Facebook at Steinway, or hit me on the gram at Steinway & Sons. Subscribe to Soundboard on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, or wherever you pod your casts. Steinway & Sons is the official piano of Big Ears Festival and a proud sponsor of Jazz House Kids. Thank you for listening.